Well, welcome to the D&K Repost Non-League Show, and we're here for the next 45 minutes to an hour, and we've got some very special guests tonight because everybody's got to be on their best behaviour tonight because, of course, joining us tonight is the one and only at Met Police, of course, Metropolitan Police Manager and Assistant Manager, Gavin and John. And Gavin and John, I've got one thing to say to you before we start, and that was Jim Cooper has said he wishes you all the very, very best, even though it is his birthday today, so happy birthday, old boy. But he did say he would like me to pass on his regards to you, knowing that you guys were on tonight. So, job done. But I suppose we start off, I suppose, with the form, if we can, because I know Gavin and John, and if you know, I was chatting to Gavin the other week, and for the Summer League show, and we were talking about how, you know, what a nasty run of form matches you had, etc. that you had coming up, and you've gone through some of them, and it's been not too bad so far.
John, you want to answer that one?
Yeah, well, we sat down as a group and looked at it, and to be fair, it's not just the last week, it's probably till the end of the season, but we went away to Poole, away to Plymouth, away to Weston, all in a week. So the amount of miles we covered is unbelievable. But for us, we're always the underdog. No one expects us to be thereabouts at the end of the season. So for us, we're there to go and spoil and see how well we can do and kind of test ourselves against the big boys of the league. So for us, it's exciting. A lot of travelling, but still a really exciting adventure.
And 6 games in 21 days coming up, and hopefully 2 more at the end of it. But, you know, maybe even 8 by the end of May. But, of course, Bracknell Town this weekend away, then away again to Yate, then home to, of course, to Steve's Harrowborough, and then a lovely trip as your last away trip. Eh? What a trip to have as your last away trip, all the way down to Plymouth again for Truro. And then, of course, then back home for Bracknell Town and Dorchester. And it's interesting because you haven't played Bracknell yet. And you could say, what, 6 games that we just said left in the league, and 2 of them are against Bracknell. And we were talking about teams in form. You know, there's a couple of teams in the league that are sort of slipping off the form, which has been quite surprising, in Western Supermare and Chesham. But sitting top of that form table is Bracknell, and you've got to play them twice. Yeah, I mean, they're a great side, Bracknell, anyway, aren't they? You know, so it's going to be a couple of tough games. And in all fairness, all 6 games, everybody's fighting for something. Truro, of course, fighting for something, and Harrow and Yate, they're all fighting for, and Dorchester as well, fighting for everything.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, we spoke the other week, and it couldn't be understated, really, the run that we had to put on. We're still in there. We're still fighting. We're still in with a chance, although albeit, you know, probably we're outsiders at the moment. However, as long as it's still alive, we'll be still alive, definitely. Bracknell's obviously really tough, you know, the run of form they're on, and the players that they've actually got. We know them quite well. I know Clergy quite well. And we know essentially how tough a physical challenge it's going to be to go and play them. So in respect of having them twice, is probably going to be even more difficult than any other run-in that we would expect at this time. However, look, you know, I've said on our own media recently, it's not about making bold predictions and saying, listen, it'll be no problem. Look, you know, from our point of view, we understand what we're up against. We understand largely what we've got to do and how good we've got to be on the day. The business really for us is that we don't fear anyone. We'll do our homework as we normally do, and we'll get the boys prepared as we normally do. If that falls short, it falls short. And I'm sure John backed me up on this. The first thing we do is go, if we do fall short against anybody, is we go right back to where we are and go, OK, what did we do today? How did we prepare the side today? Did we actually get it right? And, you know, there's been some tough lessons over the last 4 years. There's been some tough lessons this season, but it's good to self-reflect. I believe the players also do that. But with the games we've got, we don't fear anyone. So we'll go and give it a go and see where we are in a month's time.
I mean, the thing is, though, guys, I mean, I look at it as well. You know, I would have said if we look back at this maybe 6 weeks ago, you know, the top 4 was done and dusted, you know, or the top 5 was done and dusted with the teams that are in there. And there was quite a big gap between sort of 5th and 6th, et cetera, et cetera. And now you look at it, you know, Chesham 66, Poole 68, who have played a game more than you guys. You on 61, Supermarine on 62. And of course, we know tomorrow night, I think it's tomorrow night or Wednesday night, of course, Chesham face Western Supermare as well. You know, you've got Bracknell twice. So it's really is still, you know, wide open. And in fact, you could end up playing Bracknell, what, three times in the space of a few weeks, if you know, if everything went well.
Go on, you want to go with that one?
Yeah, for me, that we again, we sit down and look at things, and historically, someone generally always falls out of the playoff that you think is going to be there. Thereabouts, probably February, March, you look at it, you go, yeah, they're going to make the playoffs, and then someone just tumbles. So our hope was someone was going to tumble, and it looks like there's a couple in there that are at the moment. Bracknell could still go and win the league, for me. They could be the league champions at the end, and we've got them twice, so we could stop that happening and effectively try and get ourselves in the playoffs. So they're massive games for us. Not massive games for us, but they're just another game for us as the league goes on. But for them, they're trying to win the league. We're trying to make the playoffs, as we have done probably the last few years. It's always been kind of our target. Can we push as high as we possibly can? But we don't put any pressure on anyone. There's no pressure on the players. No pressure on us from the football club above. We just try and go out there and play good football and create a pathway for young people to come through and progress in a game. While maybe hopefully as management team creating a side that could be competitive and succeed and achieve something at the end of the season.
And talking about that, I mean, John, it's a great show. It goes into sort of some of the stuff that, you know, we wanted to talk about tonight. You know, I mean, some of the stuff here is because a lot of the time, you know, I'd say my brother-in-law was a police officer. So I knew about, you know, the lottery and that sort of side of it that was going into the funding. But I mean, talk to us a little bit, guys, a little bit about how the club is now funded. Because a lot of people think it's completely funded by the Metropolitan Police and everything he's done. So talk to us a little bit about that. And also about the, you know, I think a few people look at it and go, qualification, every single one of your players is a police officer. Well, they may have been, I think, in early days of Jim Cooper, maybe, but maybe that's not the, you know, I know it's not the case anymore. But I mean, so tell us about those two things first. Well, you know, how is the club funded and you know, and why is there not now more police officers involved in the, you know, in the actual squad itself?
I'll go with this, John. So, like, funding-wise, I mean, the club is self-funded. You know, I don't get me wrong, Dave, I'm very aware of a lot of things that are written about our club. It's an easy target, and I get why it is, because of, you know, the badge that it dons and, you know, the name above that badge. And it's quite an easy target to have a go at. I mean, that just comes with the territory. I'm not moaning about that one bit. But I saw a post, I think, the weekend that someone was saying about, you know, all the money that they get from the Metropolitan Police Service. Club is completely self-funded. It's a football club at the end of the day. Yes, its origins are from the Metropolitan Police Service. And as you quite rightly say, early days of Jim, basically it was an all-police side. And I'll come to why it's not in a minute. But even then, it was self-funding itself. And you mentioned the lottery. It's fortunate enough to be able to focus on a lottery that is run within the Metropolitan Police. So it's a cash lottery that people voluntarily participate in or they don't. And effectively, it keeps the sports sections going in respect of facilities, etc. And the club run that. So it's completely self-funded. And it has been for years and years and years and years. There's no question about that. Certainly in my time, I've seen it go from an all-police side to the club that we've got now, which is a proper football club with as John mentioned, about proper development. But the then Commissioner, Ian Blair, I believe, stopped all time off for police. So top stopped all time off for sport. And certain people would say, yeah, I understand that, get it. You know, getting back out on the streets, that type of thing. And the club in I forget what year it was, but it was, you know, a few years ago now, almost sort of had the choice of, do we actually keep going? Do we fold as a football club, or do we actually keep going with what would be players of good character in some respects? So and they decided that, you know, the facilities, the club was there, it's over 100 years old, it's got some history behind it. So effectively they looked at, you know, keeping going and how could they keep going. And that sort of then lent towards us going down the route of a development club, getting your academies in place, getting your youth teams in place, like normal clubs would be, because our club was probably less than norm in those days. And what we've done is we've just gone and enhanced that and then worked hard now on our community aspects. So to try and work alongside the Metropolitan Police outreach teams to then bring sport together, to try and bring people together, to sort of almost help the Metropolitan Police, that police officers are actually not that bad of people, although at the moment it's taking some convincing. So that's generally where we're at the moment.
So I know you're a police officer, Gavin, yourself. Am I right in saying I'm right in that? John, are you a police officer as well or not?
No, I'm an ex-national footballer. And
okay. He'd love to be.
So at the minute, how many, other than yourself, Gavin, how many police officers are involved with the actual Met Police itself?
There are some within the club, as in various roles within the club. When you look at the playing side is completely, from a first team perspective, non-police. Yes, we have police teams attached to us, like a veteran side, et cetera, et cetera. So there is still a footprint within the club. But to compete at the levels that we do with, I mean, you know, even take the levels below, with no time off for police officers, if you were an old police club, you know, I believe the club would have no other option than to fold, certainly at senior level, that's for sure.
Do you get that issue, though, when you're looking for players and people that don't know the history of the club? You know, do they sometimes say, well, I'm not a police officer? Does that ever come up in a conversation? Or, you know, because I know a lot of people would still have that sort of, you know, that sort of thing of it, that it's Met Police, it's, you've got to be a police officer, be sort of play for the team. So do you ever still get that? Or is that now, has that become a stigma, but has that sort of now fallen by the wayside a little bit?
It's certainly become rarer over the years. I think just as people's understanding of what we are now as a football club takes hold, and you know, there's a lot known about us. So yeah, at first I'm sure Jim had it a lot more than me, but you know, that sort of has largely gone away, that's for sure.
John, I mean, with yourself, though, I mean, you're in charge as well of doing the sort of like the academy and as well as being assistant manager. So I mean, tell us a little bit about, you know, the academy and, you know, and your track record around players getting into, because I know you've had quite a good track record of getting players going into the professional game as well.
Yeah, I was actually speaking about this quite recently. It goes back probably maybe 12 years. We're trying to start, Stuart Searle, who's at Chelsea Ladies now, started the academy many years ago. And actually was there and a big part of how it got off the ground and kept going. And then he actually brought through the first player, a boy called Luke Gambin, that went on to play for Colchester, Barnet, went off, I think he might have become a Malta international. So we speak about, we've got seven of the magnificent seven, we call it, that have come from low-level football through the youth team into the 23. Some have gone straight from youth team football into professional games, some into the 23, some into the first team, and then on and had careers out of football. So it started 10 kind of years ago, then it kind of disappeared for a little while, and then Surly kind of got it really, really going, brought in Donovan, and they got our youth system, which is under 18s football in the Ryman League, Bostic, I think they call it now, Ishmian, if you speak to Mr. Peter Allen. It's that they have been really, really, what's the word, really become established in the community in the local area, and even in the south, probably east of England, over the last 5 years as being one of the best under 18 sides. So once that started happening, we sat down as a kind of a youth team group and said, look, we need like a plan, a 5-year plan. How can we put this all together? How can we then sit down with the senior members of the club and talk about how this kind of filters through right away to the first team? How do we get the players ready to be first team footballers at such a young age? And we mapped it out and we really worked hard at it. And I think in the last 3 or 4 years, the club's really started to see the benefits of it. Obviously, we sold Nesta to AFC Wimbledon, sold Lucas to Charlton. Renedy went to Chelsea as a youngster under 18. So again, you don't get any money for those players if they're under certain ages. Ethan Chislin obviously came through, went on, really Rob Atkinson,
Cam Green.
And along the way, numerous players that have gone into trials and continued. So it's something that we're really proud of at the club, and it's been hard work to make it happen. We also link into the junior club as well, which has got under sevens right way through to under 16s, boys and girls now. We really had a real focus around girls football more recently. The Wildcats came into play maybe 5-6 years ago, and that's been a big driver for the club. So that all is kind of underneath, and then it gets to 16 and they got to decide, do we go in under 18s combined counties, or we go in under 18s Bostic. Those players then got filtered into the 23s, and then it's for Gav to select the best ones in the first team. But the club is together from first team right the way through to the bottom where they start under sevens. Everyone communicates, everyone gets on with their own kind of roles and responsibilities, and it's really generating a proper pathway for young people to be part of and to filter through to the professional game.
I'll tell you what, though, you've done really well in that little bit there, didn't he? He did really well there because he actually promoted all of the sponsors there. He did really well there. You got, the Isthmian League, of course, and then you had the Ryman League and the Bostic League, and, of course, we now had a Pigeon Inn League. But we did really well there, I'll be honest. But no, I mean, with the kids, I say I'm always interested in, if you've got some of the, the sort of the kids coming through the system and then sort of gabbing and picking them for the first side, does that always help them? Because then when the parents come in, to put their children into your sort of youth system, they can actually see that there is a pathway through to the first team. And is it easier, the same, or harder for you to get youth players into your system because it's the Met Police? Do you understand what I'm saying? Because sometimes as you said earlier on, there's a little bit of a stigma around police officers, et cetera, and all that sort of stuff, isn't there? And wrongly, do you know what I mean? In my opinion, I've always said if a police officer comes up and says, jump 10 foot in the air, you jump 24 up in the air. Do you know what I mean? I'm an old git. So that's what I'm always brought up to be. But is it that sort of situation, with that sort of thing, because it's the Met Police, is it harder, easier, or would you say it's just the same to bring youngsters in? Because of that,
for the junior clubs from under 7 to 16, it's really interesting this question because they see it as such a privilege to play for the police. Parents see it as a safeguard, really, because it's linked to the football, to the police. So from 7 to 16, it's brilliant. From 16, then you start to get that kind of, I'm going to play for the police. But what you find is, if you've been in the system, it's natural to go straight away through it.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of community work recently to kind of change that stigma. We've linked with ProDirect Surrey to go at a different angle to show people that, listen, it's just a football club in an area, and actually it's football. Doesn't matter if it's Metropolitan Police. We're out there in the community trying to create environments for the community to come in and play football in a safe and progressive environment. So we're working hard to break down that barrier as a football club, and we do that through our community work. So that's how we're going about it. We're trying to use the ProDirect link, which is positive for the kids. They love it. You get a night kit. They all know ProDirect because it's obviously where they buy all their boots from. It's a big brand. And that's helped to kind of really open the doors and show them what kind of facilities and what kind of football club, what kind of people, what kind of ethics and ethoses we have at the club, which is very much together, hard work, family, respect. We bang those things home all the time. And the truth is, once they get in here and they see it, they forget it's just football. And they enjoy themselves. And that's what we're trying to create.
We did a recent event. When I say we did a recent event, we took, John took some of his academy lads across to Stratford. And this was a Metropolitan Police Service outreach event. So this was designed really and truthfully to work with the community to understand that police officers are not that bad, and that we sort of provided, along with some coaches from West Ham, that sport aspect of it to try and bring people together through that. So I think your question to me was like that, is it harder to bring players in? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think they understand that generally a football club. I think John sees it more as they go up the ages. that peer pressure might come into it in respect of the badge they're wearing. But certainly from the point of view of putting them into the first team, which is, I think, what you mentioned, yes, I think there is a recognised pathway there with that 100%. And I think that actually aids us with some of our recruitment because, you know, quite frankly, we don't have the money to be able to say that. So this is a big part of what we do. And it's a big, if you like, selling feature to bring in good players in, that they're going to be developed, they're going to be coached well, and that they have a chance of getting into our first team. They will always be given that chance because that's how we have to roll. So there's a lot going on. And, you know, we're doing a lot of work. We had the juniors in on Saturday before our game, playing on the pitch to, you know, girls and boys to just move that on a little bit more in respect of they see the ground sometimes from playing out the pitches out the back, but to be actually playing on the ground and playing on the pitch and being involved in the stands and being mascots, you know, just helps. I mean, it's not anything that most clubs don't do at our level, let's be honest, but we're trying to actually forward it on with outreach events as well.
So with that as well, I mean, with the club, because I always remember, and I don't mean this to be, you know, disrespectful, especially when Jim was sort of had the reins with it as well. Met Police wasn't one of the clubs that you was always thinking about maybe getting the promotion. They were sort of sitting in the middle or they'd start off really well and then drop off and that sort of stuff. And so how have you guys sort of turned that around? Because, you know, the last two or three years that I've been involved with the Southern League, the Met Police has been pushing in the playoffs, pushing for promotion. You know, what has been the difference? What have you guys done? Is it the development because you're bringing more youngsters through? Has it been, you know, what has changed a little bit from, not necessarily the mentality, but how have you sort of moved it from maybe from a club that's sort of mid-table hoping to get to the playoffs to now a club that's in the playoffs hoping for promotion? How is that sort of that little bit extra occurred?
I think it's fair to say that. So I mentioned the budget, and I'm not going to go overboard on that. But you know, we aren't competitive, no way. You know, that shouldn't prevent us from looking at those sorts of areas and saying, well, we can actually achieve that. It's much easier to go out and get seasoned non-league players who have played God knows how many games that are going to cost you a few quid if you've got a few quid. But if you haven't got a few quid, then you have to come at it from really twofold. Certainly with recruitment, you have to have a system. A lot of people say to me, we want to do what you do. Okay. And now John alluded to it earlier, and he was talking about 12 years. These things don't roll overnight. They take planning in respect of that development, that pathway we're talking about. And it means having the right people in the right places. And when I say that, yes, I'm part of that, but there are lots of people, and John mentioned them earlier, that deserve a lot of credit for being part of that process, so that I can actually say at my end, do you know what? I'm going to put these players in. But the development that goes on for the players is one thing. There's also a recruitment side, both at young players and both at being smart with maybe slightly older players who are older than the youth system, and looking at that step five and step four to try and bring those players in, because by definition, you know, they're not as seasoned, and they're chomping at the bit to have a go. And we love that. We absolutely love that. Now, what comes through that season is a transition then of teaching them the right things. And I've got a great team around me, including John, great team for this. Teaching them the right things, developing them the right way, putting the right head on their shoulders. And some of them fall by the wayside and some of them don't. But generally what we get is we get a mixture of that. We bring it together with the expertise that we've got on the management team. And if you're asking me to put my finger on why we're up there every season, we always start the season actually saying, look, we just need to stay up. That's our remit. So we're going to stay up this season. And we actually felt, John, back me on this one, that this was going to be our most difficult season without a shadow of a doubt, because I found that recruitment aspect a lot harder in the summer. But what we saw was some really talented boys come through again. And you know, mentioning the Josh Keir for one at the moment, who's been phenomenal for us this season, who's made that step from the 18s straight into the first team and, you know, is playing very well week in, week out.
But I mean, with this, so I've always been interested in, I've asked this question of, you know, loads of different managers and assistant managers and, you know, coaches and all the rest of it. Yes, how difficult is it now when, especially as a club like yourself as well, you know, the season's now, what, I don't know, 4 weeks away from being finished, 4 weeks, 5 weeks away from being finished, possibly 6 weeks, depending on how results go. So, you know, for all clubs. So when do you guys, when you're still in that position where you could possibly get into playoffs and could still possibly get promoted to step two, when does your thinking, when do you guys sort of sit down together and think, well, look, we've got Jeff, Fred, Harry, we want to keep them for next year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And come on, look, after training tonight, we need to have a sit down and have a chat with them and see whether or not they'll stay for next year. When does all that sort of side of it start to come into, especially for a club, as you said, it's very difficult. Sometimes you find to actually get the players in. How difficult then is it, you know, that for you to start talking to these people to actually get them to come in? Because I always look at it sometimes when I was involved in Harlow and you think, oh, first team training starts on whenever it was, June, middle of June or whenever it was. And I would think as a manager, I could turn up on Tuesday night and I could be the only sod standing there. Do you know what I mean? Because you just don't know who's going to come through the door because they could all be off in all different directions.
So, I suppose always an element of that, but I'll let John answer a little bit in a minute as well. But from my point of view, my planning for next season started in probably September. Simply because I have to think that I'm going to lose. We lost nine last summer. Okay, from a playoff side. And I have to think that way. Now, if that doesn't happen, then all well and good. You're in a better position. But if that does happen, you can't pick up the pieces in June and go, right, I've just lost nine. Okay, who do we need to sign? So, you know, we're quite smart of our recruitment, but also, and this will probably lead on to John answering this, also we've got that within as well, what's coming through. And I'll hand over to John on that.
Yeah, we talk about the club next in line. So who is the next in line? So we're always looking, as a gaff, it starts in September. So my job is to keep trying to find the next in line and who that is and making sure they're ready to jump into the first team. Now, below me is Paul Bunnell in the 23, so we're well with Paul. Then there's obviously the youth team manager, Dean. So we are constantly trying to find the next in line to give Gav that percentage of what he needs for the first team. Then it's Scotty that is brilliant at recruitment, that works with us. You've got Dean, the goalkeeping coach. So between us all, we're finding the young players that come through, the step five, step six players that are going to be good enough, and the ones out there, we've got a coach to be able to be ready and then try and keep some of the boys that are here from last year. So Gav's right, that starts probably in September, because if we do poorly, we lose everyone. And we're a club that everyone could look at and say, we'll just come and take away from the Met. Don't pay loads. Got young, hungry players. We're just there to kind of be picked off. But we create a really, what I call, good football environment. So some people just stay because they know they develop. They feel like it's a family that they're at. They feel like it's a family club. They want to go in the right direction. They know clubs always pushing to go in the right direction from a football perspective. So they generally try and stay. But if the players are going on, we'll say goodbye to players that are going step two. If you're going to be a step three player, then we hope you'll stay with us and we'll get to step two together. Otherwise, yeah, that's how we have to create that environment and that belief that we are who we are. And we've got a strong belief we are who we are and we do it the right way. And I think the players appreciate that. They're at the centre of everything that we do.
And I suppose with all that recruitment and all the rest of it and helping out with sort of like with the recruitment, of course, would be, and I can't even believe I'm saying this, and you know, because I'm still in shock from when me and Gavin spoke about it a few weeks ago. But I suppose one of the necessities would probably be, I can't even believe I'm saying this, and even though I'm a massive fan of it, is a 3G pitch for you guys. Because, and the reason I say it like that for is because I'm always told that Invercourt's one of the best grass pitches, you know, in non-league football. Do you know what I mean? Along with people like Hamwell Town. So, you know, it's almost like sacrilege saying, well, look, 3G pitch. And, you know, I think if you ever did manage to do that, it would literally be people there crying their eyes out, I think, or people wanting the pitch to put down in their back gardens and stuff like that because of how good it is. But, I mean, how... You know, is that an actual necessity, and would that help you know, you bringing money in, et cetera, for you to be able to then have a bigger budget, especially if you get promoted this year and going to step two. You know, you definitely, if you're going to step two, and this is no disrespect, I would expect be, you know, probably the lowest, you know, what's the name in there. But so I mean, is it become that sort of situation necessity? And if it is, how does a club like Met Police, and again, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, get the money to pay for the 3G pitch? Is that all going to be from the Football Foundation and stuff like that?
Gav, I'll go first and I hand over to you. From my perspective, firstly, it would service the community hugely. We're just outside the Kingston Borough in Elmbridge. Kingston itself, I believe, doesn't have maybe one 11v11 3G pitch, which is there for community use. You've got, obviously, Fulham, pro clubs, maybe a couple of private schools, but there's no, I believe, 11v11, like, 3G pitch in the whole of Kingston Borough of London. So, we put a 3G pitch on Imber Court where we are. I'm like you, love the grass. It's been, like, one of the best pitches ever. It will continue to be probably one of the best pitches ever while it's grass. But it's now grown so big as a community hub. It needs a 3G. It needs a 3G for the junior clubs. It needs a 3G for the community. It needs a 3G for the academy. And without it, the club really can't go anywhere. It's stuck. It's built the whole thing. And it needs something now that they can use from Monday to Friday, from 9 a.m. till 10 o'clock at night. 7 days a week, and it will get filled, whether it's girls' football, women's football, boys' football, men's football, disability football. It will be used like by everyone and anyone. It's in a great location, and they just got to find a way. I don't know how we find a way. I'm hoping maybe from this non-league, like, kind of broadcast, it will go out there.
Of course, there's John, you're definitely too young to remember it, John. I don't know about me and Gavin. I don't know, man. I'm not saying you're older. You're an old fogey like me, but I remember it. But there's a TV show that's just literally just come back on the TV 2 weeks ago. It was around in, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, called Challenge Annika. It might be worth sending a couple of emails in the direction of Channel 5, especially if you need other stuff around the outside of the ground and all the rest of it. And yeah, you could be laughing, but it is that thing, isn't it? How do you get the money? I mean, where would somebody like Met Police look other than something like Challenge Annika or something like that? Where would you actually look?
Well, I think the club have certainly looked into it. And you mentioned Jim earlier. I mean, Jim, to be fair, was driving this quite a few years ago.
I thought he was going to say Jim was going to pay for it. I was going to say,
he probably could, to be honest with you. It's worth mentioning now that Jim was manager when we got promoted to step three. So, but Jim obviously has played on that pitch, has recognised the level that the pitch has been at and understands all that. But also, we all now understand that the club is, in my view, in desperate need of this. And there's a number of different reasons for it. You mentioned revenue, and I think every club will know that will all help. But actually, the work that we're trying to do community-wise, and I mentioned about the Met outreach teams, Metropolitan Police Service outreach teams, that is, to try and reach out through sport. There's probably never been a more crucial time for them to be engaging with youngsters. Now, normally sport is a can bring people together type thing. And we're a facility that I'm sure the club would make available for those types of events to take place. So it runs a bit deeper than just revenue. The junior section can flourish. The academy can flourish. So we start to get those, you know, those young lads developing much better, some of them from inner city areas, but also to try and make it available as a Metropolitan Police facility for our outreach teams to actually engage with as well and to run events on is massive because, as you rightly say, you know, how hard is the recruitment? Well, at times it is hard. It is hard because of the stigma of the badge, and those outreach teams are actually making the effort to try and break down some barriers. And if we can help along that, and we have tried to in recent weeks, and we will continue to, then, you know, a 3G pitch is going to go a long way to help with that. Albeit that if it gets ripped up, you'll be the first to have some transported over to your house. And then you
know,
it would be a shame, Dave, to see it go, of course. Yeah. But if you're going to be, if you're going to be effective at what you're trying to achieve, I think this is essential for us. Can the club afford it? No. No, that's difficult. We've had a look at that. What we probably need is you know, something to, some funding from elsewhere. Quite where that comes from, who knows? But
how much is there any sort of thing from the police of stuff that you can't do to raise money, or is it just you do what you can do? There's no sort of like ban on you can't do this because you're Met Police. You can do what, because we did a program not so long ago, one of the things the guys did there, and I think Bognor Regis did it as well at one point, where they had their shirt and they got people to they asked people if they wanted their name put on the shirt, and they had this shirt for a season where they had different people's names all over the shirt that was sort of like embroidered into the shirt. And it cost them, I'd say, for instance, I'm just plucking money out of the air, but say like 20 quid to have their name put on the shirt. So it was like actually inside the shirt. And of course, then what happened was, when it then came to you releasing your shirts for that season, little Jimmy said to his dad, "Look, I've got my name on the shirt. Can I have a shirt? Because it's got my name on it." So then they pay out like 25 quid, 30 quid for the shirt. And then dad wants it because his name's on it as well. And before you know what's going on, it snowballs into quite a big revenue scheme of getting in. And I know when we had the guys on, I mean, the actual shirt, I mean, I know Bognor's shirt's white and they had it in sort of like a gold colour inside the shirt, but it looks incredible. Do you know what I mean? And the bloke did say, you know, how much money they'd raise from literally just from doing that. And stupid, silly stuff like where, I don't know if all your stands have got names or whatever else, but then they had people there where they said, look, you know, for this amount of money, we're going to do a raffle. Went around local companies, did a raffle for a certain amount, and then the winner got the stadium, the stand named after them. Or I think another one where they charged 250 quid a ticket, raffle ticket, went around all the local companies and went, there you go, 250 quid a ticket. But if you win it, you get the stadium name rights. Do you know what I mean? For that season and stuff like that. And some of the stuff they were coming up with in that, you know, when they did that raffle ticket thing for the stand, they got like a little bronze plaque put on, and the bloke said it only cost a couple of quid to get it engraved or whatever else, and they got it put on one of the bricks on the inside of the stadium or whatever else, so people could see their name on it. But also did that revenue as well to raise a lot more money that way as well. So, you know, they might have the, you know, I don't know, the Nick Robinson stand or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Whatever it might be, if he was pulled out of the hat and bit business like that. But it was a really good show where the guys were actually coming up with all these different ideas. But I don't know if they're any good, but they were just some of the stuff that they you know, that they were coming up with. But the actual club itself, though, I mean, where do you, if we got to step two next season, I mean, how would that then sit with sort of finances? And, you know, and with you, with players, et cetera, would that make it even more hard? So when you said you're setting up for next season already, have you got plan A, plan B, plan C? Because, of course, in September, there could be three different divisions you could be in September. So do you have those plans in your paper of A, B, C?
So certainly an A and B, but you asked about the budget. I mean, I believe that there won't be any more money made available. I mean, in our first season, we won the playoffs. And we had the super playoff against Tonbridge, and there was not going to be any more money. The chairman is a great guy, runs the club on a tight ship, so that it's, you know, it's above water, that's for sure. And I'm pretty sure there would be no more money available. I think I'm already probably the lowest budget in step three in our league. Probably, I don't know what everyone else has got. So we would go up and we'd have a go with that. We knew the first season that we were on the verge of doing it, that how difficult that would be. Speaking to other step two managers, you know, the general consensus is you probably need $5,000 a week to just swim. So essentially, but look, as I said to you at the start, we were talking about the Bracknells and teams. We wouldn't be fazed by having a go at it. We would understand the difficulties, of course, and wouldn't make any bold predictions that, yeah, we'll easily stay up. You know, I believe that we would just go again with what we've got. Mm.
John, yourself? I mean, you haven't got no one around the corner that's got a few bob, have you, that can help out?
A few friends that are still pros, I'd love to be able to tap into and say, come on, like, give me a little bit. This is a great project that's going on. But for me, speaking about the different levels, we'd love the challenge, obviously, a step two. We should have done it when we got promoted. We won the playoffs last time and they threw in this super final, which meant that we didn't go up. So we would love to test the next level. And I think we've got a great kind of management team that work really well together and generally a good football club that I think should be operating at the higher levels. Just need a sugar daddy really to come and to fight that.
Perhaps, you know, with all that retirement money Jim Cooper's got, he might better come in and get
a sugar daddy.
Yeah, he's keeping quiet, definitely.
He keeps going away on holiday. Every time I see him, he's on a different holiday.
Ah, fair enough. Fair play to him.
But listen, John, I know you've got to leave us, and we really appreciate you coming on tonight, mate. It's been an absolute pleasure meeting you for the first time, and an absolute pleasure to have you on, and it's been fantastic having you on. So a massive thank you for coming on. And we'll just have another chat for 10 minutes or so with the boss. But a real pleasure having you on, sir. Please come on again.
Brilliant. Thank you.
No worries, mate. See you later, mate. So, I mean, Gavin, I mean, now he's gone, we can talk about him. I mean, what's he like? He comes across as a really lovely, lovely man.
Yeah. You know, I first met John a few years ago, actually, when our youth team drew Barnet in the FA Youth Cup, and he was at Barnet as one of the coaches there. I mean, he'd been a player there. Always life and soul, always smiling. You know, just a great lad to have around in that respect. But equally, very knowledgeable. You know, a massive help to me, as is Scotty and Dean and Carl, the other guys we've got. I think John alluded to it with the management team that we've actually got. Everyone brings something to my table without a doubt that just makes the whole thing work. And John is pivotal to the football club simply because you can see how many hats he wears there. Mm. He's the manager of the academy. Which is obviously, as you now know, very important to the club. And he's got a foot in the camp, the junior section as well on the Sundays. So he's entwined within the club. You know, keeps me grounded quite a lot. You know, it's still on a steep learning curve. And he'll tell you the same. He's on a learning curve in respect of where we're at, because in some respects, we're not the norm. But, you know, been a massive help to me and great coach. You know, we're on the same page as such with a lot of things that we do. When you back that up with Scotty Tarr, who's also a really experienced guy and ex-England C international, you know, we try and make up those 5-10% that maybe, you know, gives the players a little extra chance. Mm.
Well, I know it's probably off the subject of the football club, but it's quite funny. Somebody's just posted on here, a policing pledge that's come out probably from the government, and the bloke's just put on it, replacing police officers you got rid of. He's not adding more police officers. And I won't say the expletive that's put underneath it, but that's just come up on paper, which is quite apt because we were talking what we're talking. But we're inside the football club itself. I mean, what I've seen, I don't know, and I may be wrong, in the last few weeks or so, is some of the players that you have lost have come back. So is that because, again, they feel comfortable in that? Because sometimes I find you get a player that does really, really well for your club, smashing goals or, you know, smashing attackers when they come. And but one of those players that, you know, is a real sort of club icon, and then they move away for whatever reason, you know, whether it's work, whether it's money, whether it's a bigger club. They don't do it at that club. And then they come back, and as soon as they step foot back in that shirt again, they're flying yet again, and they're sort of almost like they've got their indoor slippers back on and they're playing for a club that they love. And is that the case with some of the players that you've had come back because of literally from the sheer love of the club?
Yeah, I don't want to be in danger of like, you know, that we're all sweetness and light and we're doing things unbelievably well. We're trying to do things as well as we can, but I'd like to think that's the case. You know, we mentioned about the nine that went, I think, and Ollie Knight went during this season and came back to us. Ferdy's just come back to us. Rudy Allen, Liam Beach. So that's four. I might be missing one somewhere that have come back to us, having left the club from last season. So I'd like to think it's because that, you know, they find a sense of belonging really to the football club. They're always, you know, going to be in a position where more money is going to be a temptation. I get that. And I don't knock other clubs for that. Certainly not. It happens at all levels. But maybe if it doesn't sit well at other clubs, I've gone and tried it, that I think we try and promote that sort of that sense of belonging at the football club. Like John mentioned, at family. It sounds a bit corny when I'm saying it, but I'd like to think that's probably why they, you know, tend to come back to us a lot of the time. And you know, we mentioned the four this season, but, you know, we could go back and back and back on that over the last few seasons. And there are others I could easily mention on that.
Mm. Something we mentioned earlier on in this, and when I was saying that, I meant that as, you know, in the football community, in all, I mean, these players have been at Harlow before now, when I was there, that went away, came back again and did really well. Even though, you know, even now that sort of do stuff at Enfield, who's been a player there that went away, came back and did really, really well, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's a bit like that, isn't it? You get somebody that's really good in your club and they're doing really well. Is that because of the way the manager plays? Is that the way, and then they move to somewhere else? Sometimes because they think the grass is greener on the other side, and then they all suddenly just sort of turn back again and come back to that club. But the person we was talking about earlier on, Steve Baker, he just put another tweet out. He's put on here, following a serious knee injury to James Taylor against Halifax. I'm hoping everyone in the football family can give him a little bit back. I think they've started, if you get to the link on Steve Baker's Twitter feed, which is SteveBA99880334. And I think there is a Just Giving page there for James, of course, who has got, as he said, there has had a bad knee injury and are trying to raise some money for him. So if anybody knows James or Harrow Borough fans or whatever else, then please go on there and donate and help the young man out. And hopefully he'll be back in football sooner rather than later with that. But I mean, the actual, I can put this, are Met Police where you think they should be? Or do you feel you've overachieved this season? Do you feel you've underachieved this season? Or, I mean, what was the plan before? I know you said it being sort of almost, you know, we wanted to stay up in step three. But, I mean, is it a case of, in your own mind, you know, you definitely wanted to get into playoffs and you thought, you know what, we can do this and we can get up?
So the remit, there's a difference between remit and what you think you can achieve. You know, the remit that's set down from the chairman is to maintain our status at step three. That's basically what's given to me each season. From our point of view, we will quietly go away and we'll quietly be confident about achieving, like we have done in respect of, you know, making the top five in the last two seasons that have finished. This season, and I mentioned it earlier, I just felt that I had a feel for the way the recruitment was going in the summer. And when I say the recruitment was going, we were speaking to, so those plans are in place in September and it goes on, but actually we were starting to get less of our targets. That was mainly because there were clubs, I won't mention them, but there were clubs very close to us in proximity who I believe are paying very, very good money. And sometimes you tend to be in that same pool for players. And we were getting less of our targets in respect of that recruitment in the summer. And I thought, okay, based around what's happened in previous seasons, that probably alludes to the fact that this is going to be a much more difficult start maybe than what we've had in previous seasons, especially having lost the nine. And the start was a little bit up and down. You know, won our first two, I think lost our next two, something like that. And then it sort of carried on a little bit. And we'd stayed sort of in that top half. I think we might have dropped into the bottom half at one stage, but we stay in around the sort of top half. to start with and weren't pulling up any trees consistently, that's for sure. Getting some really good results at times and followed by maybe an inconsistent one. And I think what's happened is those lads, along with their development, along with what they're being told and along with what they're being coached and along with them acclimatising to the level, Christmas came and we kicked on. We kicked on. We suddenly hit the ground. You know, we started to see what maybe was a little bit inconsistent in that first half of the season. With an inconsistent start or a relatively inconsistent start, it means to achieve anything, you've got to be almost perfect in your second half of the season. And we probably haven't been that, that's for sure. But, you know, as I say, we're in with a shout. We're hanging in there. We've got something to aim for. We've got something to play for, albeit that we're probably a little bit outsiders at the minute.
Well, completely off of football. I don't know if anybody heard that in the background, but it's amazing how the clocks go forward yesterday and all of a sudden the ice cream man decides he's going to start getting round until different places. You can hear him pinging on the outside. But I mean, with it though, I mean, with the games you've got left, and you know, so we've got you've got sort of Bracknell, sort of you know twice in that as well. I mean, do you at Met Police have contracted players? And if you do, do you have contracted players up to the end of the season, or do you have contracted players up for an extra week?
So they're contracted up to cover the playoffs, I believe. But when you say contracted players, I think we've got one. And that is the long and short of it. We're in a position where we've never really been a massive contract club. Some clubs are complete contracts. You know, everyone signs a contract with a year's option. We've never really been that. In some respects, you know, we want to see our youngsters progress. We don't want to hold them back. And even those that have been on contract and have had that sort of contacts coming from pro clubs, if you like, we've still not looked to hold them back in that respect. So yeah, we're not really a contract club. We hang on quite a lot of the time, hoping that the 7-day approaches are not going to come flooding in. They have this season, probably more than any other season that I've been in charge. We probably have more 7 days. Thankfully, we've had very few of them leave the football club. And I know some of the money that some of them have been offered. So I can't put my finger on why they don't do that, but I think they see it as, because they're normally younger in years, the development is key. And they think, you know, my time will come to maybe earn a few quid from the game.
I mean, with this, I mean, one of the last questions, because I honestly don't know. I've seen a lot of hoo-ha about it on the TV today and, of course, over social media over the last, I think since the last time we spoke, in all fairness, and that's around contracts. Do those contracts issues that are going on at the moment, does that include our steps as well, or is it just steps one and two?
Yeah, that's the chair. I was speaking to the chairman about it on Saturday in a brief conversation. It's going to be hard going for clubs at our level, or harder going for some. You know, some it won't affect, but the majority, I think, it will affect. You know, holiday pay, all sorts of things are now going to have to be, factored in. And I haven't read massively on it, but certainly it's going to make it harder for clubs at our level, without a doubt. And I think there'll be a drop of contracts at our level. I think a lot of clubs will drop that sort of scenario from them, because it will become a lot more difficult. Some people will look at it and go, do you know what? This is very much needed. It brings it into line with normal employment, if you like, because obviously a lot of the players at our level will have a full-time job. But it puts extra pressure and extra financial pressure on clubs at our level, definitely.
Mm. It's going to be an interesting one. I'm thinking over the summer, I think there'll be a lot more people not on contracts than on contracts possibly next year.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's not really going to have a massive impact on us, if I'm honest, judging by how we've worked over the last few years. But I can see some clubs, it's going to have them certainly having a rethink.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Gavin, I know time's flown by, and I must admit, I've thoroughly enjoyed tonight, learning a lot more about Met Police. Some of it I did know, some of it I didn't know, but it's been absolutely fantastic. And to be really honest here, it sounds like an absolutely incredible football club. And if there's anybody around that sort of Kingston area, get yourself down to Met Police, because you can start getting yourself involved. And of course, if there is anybody down there that's got plenty of money in your back pocket, and you fancy a bit of 3G pitch named after you or whatever else, get yourself down there and start putting the offers in, because it would be a great thing for the area, of course, where Met Police. We'll be back next week. A massive thanks to Gavin for being on tonight. And it's been, as I said, a great night, and for the guys from Met Police as well. So really appreciate that. And John, of course, as well. But we'll be back next week with the show. Back to normal time at 7 next week. But until then, good night.